Good morning. Happy Wednesday. It's 7:05. You're watching and listening to the Wake Up America Show with Austin Peterson. Happy day before Thanksgiving. Thanks so much for tuning in here today. We're happy to have you on the show. Starting up top, some millennials and older generations are kid-adulting. And you know what? You should too. We'll talk about that. Adults who play. At the top of the program this morning today. Then at 7:18, a woman decided it would be a good idea while she was on a tour of a Mayan pyramid to climb to the top of the pyramid, even though you're not supposed to climb the top of the pyramid. The crowd booed. They threw water on her. I have the video. We'll talk about that. And then at 7:37 this morning, I was supposed to have Liberty Laura to talk about mom shaming. That's the title segment for today. But because she's a mom, she was up all night with sick kids, and now she can't be on the show. So, thankfully, I don't have to talk about how hard it is to be a mom online these days because Camellia hopped in at the very last minute. That's why I was late, because I was like, Camellia, please save me. That's what happens when you do live shows. So Camellia will be back with us today to talk about life as a modern mom online. And she should be ashamed. All moms should be ashamed. How dare you allow a man to desecrate your body in such a way? Even when you're married, it's wrong. We'll talk about that at 7:30 this morning with Camellia, who saved my, you know what? We're a little bit more, I guess you might say, advertiser friendly today. You notice a little bit of that different music. I'm just like, when I see all my stuff just getting demonetized, copyright. Even though I own the license to the music that I've been playing, or it's copyright free or whatever, they take it down. So I just said, you know what, YouTube, I'll use the music you give me. That's fine. And we'll do some other things too that will make it a little bit more family friendly. So for example, this, you know this clip well.
Oh my God, bro.
Oh, hell no, man. What the
There you go. So a little bit more, I guess you might say, advertiser friendly. I know Chris Morrill's going to be totally disappointed this morning. Then at 8 o'clock this morning, we've got Judge Andrew Napolitano. He's going to come on here and talk to us about, we're going to talk to him about Thanksgiving, what he thinks about Thomas Jefferson deciding not to declare a Thanksgiving, happy Thanksgiving to people. We're also going to talk to him about Donald Trump's taxes going all the way to the Supreme Court. And at 8:30 this morning, a new guest that you've never seen or heard from before, who I think you might like, her name is Finesse Moreno Rivera. And she's going to talk about an article that she wrote that said Biden's marijuana pardons really aren't that impressive. And then at the end of the show, if I have time, we're going to go through a list of good holiday horror movies. All right, so top of the program, thanks so much for tuning in, by the way. Top of the program today. Happy Thanksgiving, I guess I should say. I thank you. Thank you very much. I appreciate that you like the fall colors as well. Chris Morrill is booing me because of censorship going on. Daddy's got to make some money, okay? Just trying to get that advertising dollar. You know, I know. You're going to suffer from
emotional damage.
Right? But everybody's just wondering, Chris.
Why are you gay?
Little D Trucking this morning says, well, call my wife and interview her this morning about being a mom of six boys. Wow. Well, okay. So it's one thing to be a mom, right? But what we're going to talk to Camellia about is like being shamed online for being a mom. Like it used to be that when you were a mom, you would just get shamed by your community. Oh, you shouldn't allow a cat to sleep in the bedroom with the baby because it will suck its breath out of its body, right? But shut that baby up. Shut that baby up. Shut up. Don't yell at the baby. You yell at the baby, it's going to give it
emotional damage.
But frankly, now that you're online and we're perpetually online, there's new ways to shame mothers. That probably happens all of the time. I don't know what it's like to be a mother, although I guess in this modern context, I can be whatever I want to be.
Hooray!
So good morning, Goatfoot over on Twitch. Thanks for joining us. Good morning, Kenneth Slayer. Thanks for joining us. We're super excited to have you here. Kay Moore says, I can't wait for that one. Could have called me and wait, nope, I have an 8-to-5 job that may have a meeting at that time. All right, I finally have a morning off, says Goatfoot. Great, I am going to get a couple of mornings off the next 2 days. We will have a best of program for tomorrow and then Friday. So you will get your Wake Up America show so you can tune in, and the Cantina crew will all be there and we'll all be commenting, and I'll be at home in my PJs and I'll be commenting too, watching myself and talking to you all. So definitely watch the show tomorrow and Friday and all of that stuff. People actually wish your children dead, says K-more, because what's going to happen if you don't do what I do? I know. Are you excited to talk about this topic with Camellia at 7:30? It's going to be great. We're going to talk to her and we're going to hear from her about the, what it's like to be a modern mom online. I'm just so thankful that I don't have to be the one talking about that one, because that would have been very awkward. All right, so let's get it. Let's pump up the energy. Pump up the energy. Yes. Jam. All right, let's rock and roll. All right, I saw this article yesterday, and I know what some of you are going to think about this one, like Chris Morrell's going to be like, get a job. Yeah. I know. As Bloomberg recently reported, kidult shoppers, kidult, right? So this is like the amalgamation of kid and adult. Kidult shoppers have helped U.S. toy sales surge 37% over 2 years to $28.6 billion in 2021. This is according to data trackers out there. Toy executives and insiders first attributed the spike to exhausted parents buying their kids' toys to keep them distracted during lockdown. But a survey last year from the U.S. Industry's Toy Association found that 58% of adult respondents bought toys and games for themselves. Yeah. It's true. The kids are going out there and they're buying, the adults are going out there and they're buying all the kids' toys. It's kind of like, do I need to explain to what bronies are? Everybody knows what they are, right? These are like the adult men who go out and they buy the My Little Pony dolls, and they're like, yeah.
No, God! Yeah. No, God, please,
but
it, no!
But there have been
no!
I know.
No!
Okay, Michael Scott,
no!
Relax. Okay, yeah, I know. I know what you're thinking, but there's been some big examples of this, and not just the My Little Ponies over recent years. I actually, confession time. Oh, God, here we go.
Emotional damage!
I tried to buy one of the adult Happy Meals, and they were sold out, okay? I wanted a little bit of nostalgia, okay? I wanted to go to McDonald's and buy myself an adult Happy Meal. I thought they were going to have the little Halloween ones with that came in the little pails, but they didn't have it. And I'm also suffering from...
Emotional damage.
Because I have not been able to find a steak, egg, and cheese bagel in the state of Missouri. And nobody has contacted me because they know how important it is to me. And honestly, I'm kind of hurt that my friends haven't set up a network yet to try and get me a steak, egg, and cheese bagel from McDonald's. I know they have them in Michigan and other places, but they don't have them at the McDonald's here in Jefferson City. And I'm starting to suffer a little bit from
emotional damage.
No adult Happy Meals either for me. That's what you get for living in Jefferson City. So TikTok influencers dressing up in Y2K fashions and pretending they're going out in the early aughts. So this is kind of when you see a lot of these influencers, if you watch YouTube videos online, like my wife and I do before we fall asleep, we watch our TikToks online like adults. We watch our TikToks on YouTube like adults, obviously. But you see them, and Steffi always comments on the jeans that the young girls are wearing now these days. And I don't know, I'm not looking at their jeans, but they've got they're like acid wash jeans, kind of like, I would call them mom jeans, a lot of them, but they're just kind of like baggy jeans in the front. They kind of ride high in the hips and stuff. So this, and then they go out like it's the early aughts and they're listening to Avril Lavigne or whatever. Adult kickball leagues, which I'm not opposed to. If you're getting out there and you're getting some exercise, that I don't consider adult kickball like kid adult. Thing. Do you? I don't know. The huge popularity of Pokemon Go a few years ago.
Yeah, we gotta Pokemon Go to the polls.
We dodged a bullet there, didn't we? Now, this is one that I know you're gonna be like, cringe.
No,
I know, Disney adults. Yeah, you see, did you see that there was some meme or some picture going around the other day of two enormously large, overweight people who were at Walt Disney World, and they were talking about millennials, without kids and how all the money that they have or something like that. And I guess I can understand, it's nice to have money and not have kids. Me and my wife, although that will soon, I'm sure, be get fixed.
How dare you?
I know. Shut up, Greta. Anyone who's overly invested in the Marvel Cinematic Universe is kidulting, right? That's a good example of kidulting. But here's the thing. So before we rip on the people that are kidulting, what are some other things that are a kidulting? So we're talking about entertainment for adults that might typically be considered for kids. watching a football game on television, or, you know, or like watching any kind of sport on television, right? That's kind of a childish entertainment thing to do, right? Did I just offend some people?
Emotional damage.
I know that people are suffering this morning when I say things like that. But it's like, you know, what do you do when you're an adult? Are you allowed to have fun as an adult, right? Send us a text, 573-319-1586. That's 573-319-1586. Liberty Lovin this morning is out there with some nice words. She says, or they say, you would have been the better pick in 2016, but the LP was too busy selling crack to kids. That's heroin. Heroin to kids, not crack to kids. I'm sure they have higher standards. It's heroin to kids, you know. Anyways, back to the subject.
2 hours later.
I know. We're getting back to the subject. So, kidulting, right? What is it that we deem acceptable for adults to do? Like, I still play video games, okay? Like, so I guess I'm kidulting there. I'm a millennial. I'm having fun. Having too much fun with that one sound. Yeah, thanks a lot, Matt. Yes, which one? Which sound am I having too much fun with? That one, that does feel good. I press that button and it's just like zzz, online. Goatfoot over on Twitch this morning says, yes, you are allowed to have fun as an adult. Thank you. Yes. Appreciate that. Too many people are too serious. You know, I'm tired of people who are like, you should, as you grow older, your body grows older, you have to stay young in your mind. You know what a good example of this is nobody thought less, or maybe some people did, but, you know, did you ever watch The Sopranos? Steffi and I just recently, had our first run through with it. We finished it a couple of weeks ago. And there's that one character, I think his name's Bobby. He's like the big, huge, like fat guy that works for Tony, who's like gets married to his sister. And he has a hobby of trains. And in his whole garage is like are all of these, you know, intricate trains. And that's his hobby, right? And I don't want to spoil what happens at the end, but let's just say, you know, that the ending isn't necessarily all that great for everybody in the Sopranos family, but in that train, I mean, it's been out for a long time, okay? Like, don't boo me, okay? Like, no, I'm not going to give you spoilers, but I'm just going to say that if you haven't watched The Sopranos by now, then it's kind of like, it's been around for a long time. But that's an adult with a child hobby, right? Model trains. The thing is that for a lot of these hobbies, you can really only afford them if you're adults. I mean, or you're the child of rich parents, which not everybody's going to be. But frankly, I like that adults are tapping into their inner child. Just as long as you're responsible and you have a job. You know, if you're making money, I say throw it back a little bit. A little nostalgia is healthy for you, I think. Too much is bad, but a little bit. All right, when we get back, we're going to show you a video of a woman who decided to climb a Mayan pyramid. Pyramid piles of pyramids. All that and more when we get back on the Wake Up America Show at wakeupamericashow.com. Good morning. It's 7:23. You're watching and listening to the Wake Up America Show at wakeupamericashow.com. Nice to see all the positive comments. Will Perry this morning dropped a super chat. That's my very first one since I got monetized this week. Thank you, Will Perry. Appreciate that. He says that the UFC is not a sport. It's a way of life. I'm with you on that one, bud. You know, I was never really into sports. Definitely was not into them growing up. But as I got older, I got into martial arts to get healthy, right? I always liked to play sports, but I never really liked to watch them. But the UFC has got me, I have to say. And mostly it's because I like to see the karate guys, right? When they like, you know, do a little jiu-jitsu and then they, you know, do well. People like Wonder Boy and Lyoto the Dragon Machida. So yeah, I can say, you know, it's a way of life. At least karate is a way of life for me. That's the only way I've been able to not turn into a big, giant, fat whale. So thank you, Will Perry, for my very first super chat. Very grateful for that. Thank you so much. It's nice to see you all today. Happy Thanksgiving to you all. Grant says he had to switch from Twitch. The app kept buffering. Well, we're glad to have you over on YouTube anyway. That's where I'm trying to get everybody to come over anyway, because that's where you make, you
the shekels.
You can send us a text, though, this morning, too. 573-319-1586. That's 573-319-1586. Quest Fanning says, yeah, it's way easier to get monetized on Twitch. That's true, but Twitch is notoriously leftist. Elizabeth Fanning Press says, pay ASCAP and you can use Tunes. I was doing that. The problem is with that, and I'll just kind of give you a little behind-the-scenes stuff on how the YouTube copyright stuff works. The music that I was using, I either paid for or it was royalty-free music that was in the public domain, but it doesn't matter. If it's not part of YouTube's library, they automatically copyright hit you, and you have to dispute it. And while you're in that dispute period, you're not earning money. And then, you know, even if the dispute gets resolved, which I've had happen, it doesn't matter. If it's not from YouTube's recognized library of non-infringible songs, you have to fight after the fact to take the copyright stuff off of your account by proving you have the license. And here's the thing. Once I prove I have the license, you think that the next day when I play the next song that they're not going to copyright hit you. No, they're going to copyright hit you the next day. So if you like music in the show, then, and I do, I think it just kind of makes everything, you know, just a little bit more fun, right? Just gives a little bit more bounce per ounce, then I've got to use YouTube songs. So that's what you're hearing right now is YouTube stuff. All right, let's get to the video. This video yesterday, first made me laugh, and then I got a little upset because of how this lady was treated. Take a look at this lady here. Decided to go ahead and climb to the top of a Mayan pyramid. Look at this.
Buena!
Yeah, you're not supposed to do that. I don't know if you've ever been to Mexico.
Boo!
Boo, yeah, she's getting booed. You're not supposed to go climb a puta. Yeah, she thought... Yeah, probably not a good idea to mock people while you're doing that. Yeah, she's on a tour. She decides to climb the Mayan pyramid. Well, now, here's the thing. Puta madre. Now, this is where I think things go too far here. People grabbing her. Look at the pouring water on her. Kind of looks like she's in a little bit of danger, to be quite honest. Here's a video from another angle. You can see her. Look at them kind of pushing her. See? Grabbing her hair. Stupida! Okay, so the only thing that I guess I have to say about this after, you know, the fact is that, first of all, one, you know, you should, you know, just because she climbed to the top of the Mayan ruins, you know, is not a reason to be pushing her or to be throwing water or doing all that kind of stuff. You can jeer her, you can shout at her, call her a puta madre, whatever, and that's fine. But I will say that that's definitely not the worst thing that's happened at the top of those pyramids. Just saying to all my native friends. You know what? The next topic that we're going to talk about is mom shaming. And I just have to say that Laura Langton should be ashamed. She was supposed to be the mom on the show. And because her kids were sick last night and she was up all night, she canceled at the last minute. So let's all shame Laura for not coming on the show. And let's all give a round of applause for Camellia Peterson for stepping in, because Camellia is going to join us here. We're going to talk to her about mom shaming and what it's like to be a modern mom online. Thank God I don't have to do it alone. Liberty Laura texted in and said, I wish it were like the 80s and socially acceptable to give toddler codeine for nighttime coughs, but alas, some mom shaming is good. Oh my God. You should be ashamed, Laura. Absolutely ashamed. At least she committed a blood sacrifice, says Grant. Noted pyramid expert Austin Peterson. Yes, very true. Only OG AP for Liberty fans will get that joke. We'll be back with Camellia Peterson to talk about mom shaming. See what she should be ashamed for when we get back on the Wake Up America Show at wakeupamericashow.com. Good morning. It's 7:34. I'm Austin Peterson. You're watching and listening to the Wake Up America Show at wakeupamericashow.com. Well, Liberty Laura isn't going to be able to make it today. She was up all night with her kids who were sick. She said she wanted to give them codeine, but she can't. Back in the old days, I guess they just give them a little drop of whiskey, right? Shame, shame. Know your name. Well, one mom who we're very grateful for today, who's joining us now. Happy Thanksgiving to Camellia Peterson. She's a great mom. How you doing, CJ?
Good. How are you? Happy Thanksgiving.
Happy Thanksgiving. What is it? So let's just come start out with it. Is there anything that you think you should be ashamed of, Camellia?
Oh gosh, I was thinking about this. There's probably all kinds of things people, I mean, I don't know. I used to let my girls go out and, like, you know, play in the rain and the mud puddles. I don't know. Somebody probably would shame me for that at some point.
Well, have you ever had like a mom shaming moment online where somebody was like nitpicking your mothering for whatever reason and doing so like publicly?
Well, no, and I think there's probably a pretty good reason for that. It's because I don't put everything online.
Oh, she's a perfect mother. That's what it is. Is that
you know it?
Yeah. Well, the reason why I thought this was a good topic is I saw this woman, Coco Austin. She's a wife of the rapper Ice Cube, was crying. She's broke down in tears when she was talking about the online parenting police. She says you don't hear the goodness; you just hear a lot of bad. And she says, and I know I'm a good mother. She's kind of like famous for like crouching down and showing her butt on the camera while she's in heels and stuff. So, I mean, you know, so obviously
I can see why. Yes.
So people are shaming her online. And you know, you see this phenomenon, you know, Camellia, just talk about it too for just a moment, because I'm sure you've seen people go after moms online that they disagree with. Maybe you've done it. Maybe you've been a mom shamer.
Well, I haven't, although I will say, you know, there's so much information out there anymore as far as, you know, what not to do, what to do with your kids. Although I'll tell you, probably the circles where I've seen it most are in the crunchy circles. So, you know, I think there's probably a fair amount of mom shaming that goes on.
Yeah. How dare you give your child the V word, the measles?
Oh, I know, right?
Oh, dude,
yes.
That is the biggest mom shaming group right there in the world. How dare you give your child the poison in their veins.
Right. And like all kinds of things like medications, you know, with related to that. I mean, you know, it's you should be using essential oils and, you know, grass fed beef and everything else that's all natural. That's probably where I've seen most of it. But, you know, with Coco and this whole thing with her daughter, I mean, you know, a little bit comes with the territory in that, you know, she's putting her, not only herself out there, but also her daughter out there, kind of maintaining this celebrity status. And, you know, when I looked at some of the pictures, it reminds me of some of the beauty pageant pictures that people put their little girls in, which is, but, you know, the whole thing, like a couple of the things where the girl is six and she bathed her in a sink, which, okay, that's a little weird. I looked at the sink. It was a big sink. She fit.
Why is that weird?
I don't know. Well, to me, I'm just looking at it in a very practical point of view and thinking, you have to pick her up and get her all the way up there for starters. And that just seems impractical.
This is some mom shaming, mom shaming going on right now. You are mom shaming. I think I was bathed in a sink when I was a little kid. What's wrong with bathing in the sink? That's the weirdest thing
ever.
Nothing,
like when you're two, but yeah. I mean, you know, it's just logistically easier than when you're six. It's maybe not as easy, but I don't care if somebody bathes their kid in the sink. Like, who cares? It's a little weird, but people do weird stuff all the time. Now, we're going to talk about breastfeeding.
Is he breastfeeding? That's what it was going to be. Yeah, but here's the thing. I have seen moms who breastfeed their kids like in like the weird stuff where it's like they're like 9, 10, 12 and stuff like
yes.
that. I've seen some weird stuff around that.
Yeah, that's weird.
Mom shame, mom shame, mom shame.
I mean, you know, 3 years old is okay. I've seen that, and that's not quite as abnormal. Like 6 years old, 9 years old.
It's a little odd. It's a little odd. If you're just tuning into the Wake Up America show, I'm speaking to Camellia Peterson. We're talking about the trends of mom shaming online. I sent you another article from the New York Times. I know you only had time to skim it because it was a little bit of a last minute thing, but it's about mompreneurs and kind of like the rise of this industry online and the allure of mompreneurs, where you have like these moms that are out there and, you know, they tend to be like the crunchy granola types and some of them making millions of dollars online. And it's kind kind of like with other social media, when you look at Instagram, when you see these girls with these airbrush photos and these perfect butts and all this stuff, it puts the pressure on young girls. But now there's a lot of pressure on like older women who are moms to kind of conform to those standards, right? I think there was this woman who, her name was Maria Kang a few years ago, and she like put out this photo of her with her tight, perfect body and her three little kids, and she's like, what's your excuse, right? And it caused a huge backlash online. But I mean, you know, that you ladies are very competitive when it comes to that kind of stuff. So I can imagine that there is a lot of a lot of pressure to be the perfect mom now, even more than there was in the past.
Sure. Well, and I think it's because, you know, everything's so much more visible in a lot of ways. And I think, you know, there's competitiveness, yes, maybe to a certain extent, but we also, you know, moms, at least a lot of moms, you know, tend to be pretty self-critical and probably hold ourselves to higher standards than everybody else does, truth be told. But yeah. So, I mean, now kind of in the age of Instagram and TikTok, there is, like everything else, you see the good side of everything. And so you want to be doing all of the right things with your kids, and they're neatly dressed and everybody's matching and your house looks spotless.
Yes. Like like a certain person that we know in Southwest Missouri who no one could ever live up to, who's our friend, Kathy Jo.
Oh, yeah.
There's just no
way. One day I'm going to grow up and be like Kathy Jo. And you know what? Kathy Jo would be the first to tell you that there is no perfection. she's had her moments too, for sure.
Sure. Yeah. If you're just tuning in to the Wake Up America show with Austin Peterson, I'm speaking to Camelia Peterson. We are not related. And we're talking about mom shaming online and mom fluencers and why they're so good at worming their way into their home. But momfluencers, they write at the New York Times, the purveyors of these pernicious expectations are part of a multi-billion-dollar industry selling products to a market of millennial moms with an estimated $2 trillion to spend. Many are just trying to make money working flexible hours while spending time with their young children in a country without paid parental leave or affordable childcare. Very true, but I mean, you know, I can imagine that if your children were a lot younger, Camelia, it would be a lot harder, especially, you know, being a single mom, you know, trying to raise your kids without the kind of childcare options that you might have had otherwise, just because most companies don't offer those kinds of benefits, right? But there's a lot of pressure on moms to try and, you know, to do everything. It's kind of like this conversation that we've always had where it's kind of like there's trade-offs in life and you're just not going to be able to do everything, but there's a lot of pressure to do everything, you know?
For sure. And I think, you know, when we've talked before about women, you know, like doing it all now and having it all. So that's what has been becoming the norm, the norm expectation in our society. The stay-at-home moms are the anomaly now more than anything. And we've talked before about influencers and young people aspiring to be influencers. And basically that this is the new advertising. And it's the same for momfluencers. This is the new advertising for all of the toys and the family products and things like this. And so you look at those things and you're like, oh, that is so nice. I would really like my home to be like that. I mean, I'm not going to lie. I don't really watch the momfluencers. I watch some other Instagram stuff, but, you know, organizational stuff. But I look at that and I'm like, oh, I really like that look. That looks so clean and peaceful and organized. and like, I want that too. And, you know, I get good ideas from there. But the difference is like, it's super important to remember that, like you said, these are people who have spent a ton of hours in the background creating this advertisement for you because they are making money off of it. Mm-hmm. They are getting paid sponsorships out of this a lot of times too. And so there is a ton of work that goes into producing something like that. It's a little bit like producing a radio show in some ways. You don't see all the hard work that goes on behind the scenes.
I know, you think that you're just talking into the microphone or that the Wake Up America show's beautiful Thanksgiving decorations that you're seeing in the background right now just came out of nowhere and I wasn't slaving away at 5 a.m. this morning. Camelia, maybe I'd be a great mom. Camelia, thank you so much for coming on the show today. Happy Thanksgiving to you and your two daughters. We're always grateful. Thanks for saving my ass today. Appreciate you.
No worries. And you know what? I totally feel for Laura, and I'm so happy for one mom filling in for another mom, because it's so hard when your kids are sick, and I totally get that. So okay. I hope her family feels better.
Shame. No, we'll give her a break. No. Thanks, Camilla. Have a good one.
Happy Thanksgiving.
Happy Thanksgiving to you as well. All right. What do we got coming up next? All right. So the post office regretted creating this stamp. They were very sorry about it. What was the stamp? I'll share that with you when we get back. Don't forget, Judge Knapp coming up at 8 a.m. And then Finesse Moreno-Rivera. Quite spicy. Joining me today. She'll be here at 8:30. It's all ladies today on the show. And me, proud mom, on the Wake Up America Show at wakeupamericashow.com. Good morning. It's 7:49. You're watching and listening to the Wake Up America Show with Austin Peterson at wakeupamericashow.com. It's nice to see all the positive feedback that we're getting out there on the show. Wake Up America Show, we've been in business since September, and it's going great. Have you seen my new show, though? Yeah, Austin, AP, me, twice a day. Yeah, I actually have an afternoon radio show as well. So I do my morning like video podcast thing, and as soon as the show's over, I immediately start producing like crazy for my afternoon show. And that's at 2 p.m. Central every day. So Monday through Friday, you get the Wake Up America show. So you got to block out that 2-hour block in the morning to come and hang out with me and the Cantina crew. And then at 2 p.m., you're like, it's like your coffee fix in the morning. You're like, oh my God, I need my AP fix. 2 p.m., you join me over at the Real Talk Radio Network. And you get an hour of AP in the afternoon, and that'll kind of tide you over. I think I just drooled. That's what you get when you do it on camera. Okay, let's see. Get it right there. Yeah. Did anybody see that? Oh, God. That's embarrassing. Chris Hughes actually just sent me a message this morning. It's nice to hear from him. He said, morning, Austin. Working overnight this week. I was able to watch the show this morning. It's terrific. I donated to help continue it. You're a great spokesperson. I'm like your first super fan. Thank you, Chris. Super grateful for that. I appreciate it very much. It's the way that we keep the show going, making donations to help the show continue on down the road. The hope is that YouTube monetization will help as well. I've identified somebody that I want to hire. I think I'm going to be able to do that very soon. That's good news, right? Matt Unruly says he wishes the afternoon show was 2 hours as well. Well, here's the thing. It might become that, because if the ratings are good, this will be my first rated show. Not this one, but that show, where I'll get ratings. And so if the ratings are good, then they might give me a longer show out there. That'd be great. How cool would it be? Syndicated in St. Louis. And if that's successful, then I'm going to go to Kansas City. I'm going to go to Springfield. I'm going to go to Des Moines. I'm going to go to Houston, Dallas. I'm going to go all over the country if I can and try and convince radio stations to play my show. How nice would it be, you know, to have a libertarian talk show host get up there? I mean, you know, Neil Bortz is retired. Jim Bohannon passed away last week. He was a great man as well, a great liberty talk show host. Maybe more of a traditional conservative with liberty leanings. But it would be nice to have, you know, a libertarian voice out there in the mainstream media, you know, pushing our ideas. So that would be great. Thanks, Matt Unruly, by the way, for Matt Unruh. I know it's, I like to call you Unruly just because it's a great name. Everybody's talking about what it means to be crunchy this morning. Yes, crunchy, like organic, like crunchy granola. Robbie, I think, was asking about it today. What was my topic that I was supposed to talk about? Oh, yeah. This was hilarious. I found this. The post office regretted sending out this stamp. Let's head over to our Twitter so you guys can see. Take a look at this. This was a stamp that was sent out in 1981, the year that I was born. But in 1981, alcoholics faced tremendous stigma, said the National Council on Alcoholism. Even as alcohol itself remained as popular as ever, the stamps that they created says, alcoholism, you can beat it. Look at the, look how much it costs, 18 cents for a stamp. Boy, 1981. That year, the U.S. Postal Service put out this new stamp about alcoholism. It says, alcoholism, you can beat it. And then the O took the form of the symbol of the campaign against alcoholism, and it was a seducious, don't laugh at me. If somebody mispronounces a word, you shouldn't make fun of them, because that means that they learned it by reading. Saduceus. C-A-D-U-C-E-U-S. Shut up! Stop laughing at me. I know. All right, so the symbol was kind of obscure, but it looked cool, and you don't need to recognize it to see it's kind of like a symbol representing hope and a solution. The stamp released to more fanfare than a lot of stamps. It got its own article in the New York Times, and the National Council on Alcoholism took out a full-page ad in the Wall Street Journal to tell people about it. The Postal Service printed a lot of them, over 9 million, according to collectors. And then some months later, USPS just destroyed most of them and made no more of them because it was clear the public wasn't buying them. The problem was, and I'm sure you probably can see it, is that if someone stuck the stamp on the envelope and sent it to someone else, what would you think, right? That was like declaring that they could beat their alcoholism, meaning it was a way of telling someone you've noticed they're drinking and you want to help them stop. Either that or it sounded like an admission of alcoholism and a request for help. Yeah, most people sending mail didn't want to go through either one of those routes. So when there's a stigma against something, it's all very well to say you're going to fight the stigma, but you also have to acknowledge the stigma when figuring out how people are going to respond to your campaign. Later, the Postal Service used their experience with the alcoholism stamp when they grappled with how people would take a proposed stamp about AIDS awareness.
Why are you gay?
Would people find the stamp too depressing? Would they think anyone who used the stamp had AIDS? In the end, they did roll out a stamp with a single red ribbon, but it avoided any text that said something like, "You can deal with AIDS." Oh my God. I'd be like, somebody get that stamp in the mail.
How dare you?
I know, Greta. I know. How dare you, right? You'd have
emotional damage.
We've got Judge Andrew Napolitano coming up on the show. I can't wait to talk to him on the program. We're going to talk to him about Trump's taxes. I want to ask him about Thanksgiving. I'm excited to talk to him about that. We've got new music this morning. We've got Thanksgiving backgrounds. Happy Thanksgiving to everybody. Super grateful. Thanks to all the people who are donating this morning on the Super Chats, because now that I'm monetized on YouTube, it's totally legal for you to send me money through the Super Chat. We'll be back with more of the Austin Peterson Show. Maybe Austin needs to do a 10-minute mommy session each week. Looks like it's going over well in the comments. You have to wear the red ribbon, Grant. Great Seinfeld episode. We'll be back with more of the judge himself when we get back on the Wake Up America Show at wakeupamericashow.com. Good morning. Happy Thanksgiving. I'm Austin Peterson. You're watching and listening to the Wake Up America Show at wakeupamericashow.com. Well, my next guest needs no introduction because everybody who watches the show knows who he is. But I'm going to tell you something that I've never told you about him before. The man who basically plucked me from obscurity and placed me at his right side and spent 2 years together freedom fighting. He's not only my hero, but he's also a good friend. He fights for liberty, he's true north, and I am truly grateful and thankful for him on this Thanksgiving Day. His name is Judge Andrew Napolitano, and he's joining us now. Good morning, Judge, and happy Thanksgiving to you, sir.
Good morning, Austin. You're giving me goosebumps, but it is true, and I've said this publicly many times, it was a gift to have you as the right side, right as in correct, side of my brain for those 2 years we worked together at Fox.
Yeah, it was a wonderful.
Congratulations on all of your successes since then.
Well, thank you, Judge. And we're super grateful to have your weekly commentary on this show. I also love to take our interviews and share them with our listeners on my new afternoon show at 2 p.m. People have been watching and listening to that one as well. And the people of St. Louis are glad to be able to hear from you as well. So let's get to it. Judge, I don't know how to feel about Donald Trump's taxes being taken up by the Supreme Court. It seems to me to be a gross violation of privacy on one side, but then on the other side, he was president of the United States. So when you're a government official, you have different sort of scrutiny on you. What's your take on this story?
My take is that Trump's lawyers dropped the ball by failing to challenge the constitutionality of this statute. The statute permits Congress to examine any taxpayers' returns. Well, no one prepares their taxes expecting politicians to see them. You prepare your taxes just for the IRS to see. This is a gross violation of privacy. Look, Trump claims he's a billionaire. Do I want to know that? Yeah, humanly, I want to know it. Trump's claims he was a fabulously successful businessman. Do I want to know it? From a human perspective, I want to know it. But Trump has the same right to privacy as anyone else. And no way did Trump prepare his taxes expecting that his political adversaries in the Congress would be able to look at it and pick them apart and exploit them. So two balls were dropped. His lawyers failed to challenge the constitutionality of this, and the Supreme Court failed to take the case. Very bad. And now he's going to suffer for it. And just remember, if you don't like Donald Trump and you want him to suffer, what the Congress did to him, they can do to you.
Good point there. If you're just tuning in, I'm speaking to Judge Napolitano. He's the host of the Judging Freedom podcast, which you can download on all of your mobile devices. And you can also read his weekly column at judgenap.com. I was reading a story yesterday on Reason Magazine from our friend Damon Root, how a Gorsuch LGBT ruling may doom affirmative action in college admissions. Can you decode that headline for us, Judge? It doesn't make much sense.
Sure. So Gorsuch is Justice Neil Gorsuch, who was the libertarian member of the Supreme Court, a great, great human being with whose brain I am fairly familiar. We both studied legal philosophy a generation apart under the same great professor, John Finnis, F-I-N-N-I-S. I studied under Professor Finnis at Notre Dame Law School, and Justice Gorsuch, when he was taking his PhD, did so at Oxford. Justice Gorsuch joined the liberals in a shocking decision extending the Civil Rights Act of 64 to protect LGBTQ. Now, LGBTQ, which wasn't called that in those days, was twice suggested and offered as an amendment to the Civil Rights Act of 64 when it was being debated on the floor of the Senate in 64 and twice refused. Nevertheless, the Congress used the word sex, not the word gender, to prevent discrimination based on gender. If they had said gender, it would have meant you can't discriminate between the two genders. But instead of gender, they said sex. You can't discriminate on the basis of sex. Sex means all things sexual. Therefore, it means LGBTQ. Therefore, the Civil Rights Act of 64 prohibits discrimination based on LGBTQ status. Okay, that's the history. Coming before the Supreme Court are two cases. They've already been argued, one against Harvard, one against the University of North Carolina, to prohibit discrimination based on race. Harvard and the University of North Carolina have taken the position that they can discriminate on the basis of race in order to produce a more homogeneous and diverse student body. But the statute is very clear. All discrimination based on race by a state or anything a state owns, University of North Carolina, or any educational institution receiving federal funds, Harvard, is wrong. So the Damon Root's theory, in my view, is absolutely correct and quite laudable. Justice Gorsuch will probably side with the liberals again and give them a majority, because the chief almost always goes with the majority, to find racial discrimination in college admissions unconstitutional, because the statute doesn't say it's constitutional if you do it for a good reason and unconstitutional if you do it for a bad reason. The statute just prohibits all racial discrimination if you're owned by the government or receive cash from the government. Mm. So that's Damon Root, who's a non-lawyer but knows the Constitution better than most lawyers do. That's Damon Root's quite astute and I think accurate prediction.
If you're just tuning in, I'm speaking to Judge Andrew Napolitano. Judge, you wrote a column that will appear this week at judgenap.com regarding Thanksgiving, and I'm excited for our listeners to be able to read it. I'd love for you to share a little bit of it with our listeners. But before I do, before we get into that, Judge, I have a Thanksgiving-related question for you, and I wonder what your thoughts are on this. You probably know the story of Thomas Jefferson and how he kind of famously refused to celebrate Thanksgiving while he was in the White House. And how Thomas Jefferson said that he didn't want to wish people happy Thanksgiving while he was president because he thought it was a violation of the separation of church and state. Are you familiar with this story? And do you have a particular opinion about that, whether or not, you know, wishing people Thanksgiving violates church and state? Don't you wish more people were like Thomas Jefferson these days?
Right. Yeah, and you thought that I was way out there on some of these things. Well, your listeners should know that if Austin Peterson and Andrew Napolitano have any common hero, it is Thomas Jefferson. But on this, I don't think I would go as far as he does. And I commonly wish people happy Thanksgiving, basically meaning it's a happy time. It's the fall. The winter is not yet here. It's a 4-day holiday. Spend it with your family. Enjoy yourself. Remember how good it is to have a supportive family. Not everybody has one. If you don't have one, as Chris barking in the background, I hope you're with friends. That's what it means to me. To me, it is not religious at all. I had a famous super pre-Vatican II Latin mass attending Catholic professor at Notre Dame, Charlie Rice, who refused to say happy Thanksgiving because it was too Protestant. Sorry. I mean, you can go in any direction you want on this. But from this old-fashioned Catholic to mainstream America, I am happy to say happy Thanksgiving. And I would say it from the bench wearing my black robes because I didn't view it as a violation of the First Amendment.
Judge, one last thing.
Listen, these are the best conversations I have all week.
I'm so glad. I'm thankful for that, Judge, and we're grateful to have you here on the show today. Judge, I guess one last question that I have before I let you go regarding your column, you know, just set this up appropriately. You know, if Thomas Jefferson is one of our greatest influences, then Ron Paul probably has to be another one. And I know you know yes. him, know him well. And over the years, we would watch his speeches in Congress. And one of his most famous speeches was a speech that he wrote where he asked, where instead of making the exclamatory statements, he simply asked questions, you know, what if questions. And because of that famous speech that he gave in Congress, I know that you were inspired to write many great speeches for our show Freedom Watch that that I helped to produce. And those speeches that you gave were, you know, epic, sweeping, stirring speeches in defense of liberty, where the what if question was less of a question and more of a statement. But because of the way it was asked, it really opened up people's minds and eyes and their hearts to new possibilities. It's amazing what the difference between a question asked and a statement made has on people's psychology for how they accept new ideas. Your column this week, inspired by those many great speeches that you wrote, inspired by Congressman Ron Paul, gives a Thanksgiving message. Would you summarize that with our listeners, for our listeners, please?
Well, the Thanksgiving message is one of the things we should not be thankful for is the government, because it has grown, it has broken the chains that the Constitution imposed on it to keep it within the confines of the Constitution. And there's probably maybe 200 what-if questions in there. The answer to each of them is yes. The answer is obviously yes, but it points out how the government has taken our property, sapped our liberty, and intruded into our personal businesses and personal decision-making in ways that the Constitution never authorized. And it's about time we woke up and recognized this. And what we should be thankful for is that our rights are natural. They come from our humanity, which is a gift from God. They don't come from the government. And we should be reminded that we have the right, when the government destroys our liberty, to alter and abolish it. Those are not my words. Those are from the Declaration of Independence, written by the great Thomas Jefferson.
Judge, if I could press you on one thing that I go over in my mind, and one of the biggest challenges, the difficulties, is really like the question of revolution itself, violent revolution, political revolution, right? You know, I made the joke on January 6th that, you know, we should have stormed the Capitol back when they passed the New Deal, right? And that got me in a lot of hot water on Facebook. But, you know, the question is, I guess, how can we at one time, you know, push back against political violence in this modern age and see it as wrong, but then also embrace the foundational principles of the Declaration of Independence, what you just said? How can we, on one hand, you know, refuse political violence while also still holding to those ideals? I mean, I guess the question really is, when is it time to water the tree, Judge?
Well, when the government has blocked all opportunities to exercise our liberties, it's time to water the tree. By water the tree, you're referring to spilling the blood of patriots on the tree of revolution, which Jefferson said should be done once in every generation. He either meant that literally or metaphorically. If he meant it literally, then the time would come when the government has so clamped down on liberties that we can't adequately express them. But there's an old phrase, treason never prospers. And what's the reason? For if it prosper, none dare to call it treason. You can't strike at the king unless you're going to kill him. You can't use violence to liberate people from an oppressive government unless you win, because if you lose, you'll end up in jail or in the grave. So you have to strike at the right time. If Jefferson meant that metaphorically, then that meant that the Constitution needs to be re-ratified and the laws need to be reenacted once in every generation, and that we shouldn't just be saddled with the decisions of our ancestors made in a different era when they believed that the Constitution would work. And we now know that as a restraint on the government, the Constitution is an abysmal failure.
Judge, people frequently ask me if I would ever run for president again, and typically my answer is no, but I think that if I were to run, it would be for the singular purpose of appointing you to the Supreme Court. Happy Thanksgiving, Judge. Have a great week.
Oh, right back. Thank you, Austin. Right back at you. My best to you and your family and your great listeners. Until next Wednesday.
Until next Wednesday. Happy Thanksgiving. Did you like our interview with Judge Andrew Napolitano? Send us a text at 573-319-1586, and we'll be back with more on the Wake Up America Show at wakeupamericashow.com. Good morning. It's 8:22. You're watching and listening to the Wake Up America Show with Austin Peterson at wakeupamericashow.com. What do you think of Judge Andrew Napolitano? Great interview, right? It's always fun to have him on. Get him every Wednesday. You can text the show today at 573-319-1586. That's 573-319-1586. All right. I saw this article today. An Alaska mom of two is opening up about what she says is the truth about Thanksgiving, or, quote, truthsgiving. That's what they're calling it. She's calling herself an indigenous mom. You know, I'm not going to get into mom shaming just yet here. Let's see if I can pull up this clip for you so you can watch it. Hopefully they're not going to give me an advertisement. Let's pull on over here.
Well, I think what America believes is the story of Thanksgiving is pilgrims and Indians coming together for a happy feast after their harvest, and that there was this big friendly gathering. And it's not really the case at all.
And it is true that there was a successful harvest that led to the first Thanksgiving, where people really did come together. Unfortunately, this friendship was short-lived.
Here comes the lecture. Lecture time. The darker parts usually gets left out. It never gets
English
left out.
English and the Wampanoag tried to live side by side in harmony, but it really went downhill quickly.
So there were several wars after that time with indigenous groups.
No.
Thanksgiving
really
not only marginalizes the Wampanoag, but it spreads a lot of misinformation, and it's as if the world started at the year 1620. In fact, it's etched in stone on the waterfront of Plymouth, Massachusetts.
We all know the truth is that history began on July 4th, 1776, and everything before that was a mistake.
rock. And people don't generally.
This is Good Morning America, by the way, who's, you know, lecturing us
to learn about what happened before that.
And so it gives this sort of.
I want to pause here for just a moment because I'm noticing a certain amount of melanin going on here in these people's. Notice this guy right here,
like
vaguely ethnic, but honestly, I think before we get lectured this year on Thanksgiving, I want to see some DNA tests, and I think that you should do this from now on too. Whenever you get a lecture from an indigenous person, ask for the DNA test. Ask them very specifically, like, I want to see the 23andMe. And if you're half Native American and half Mexican, it doesn't count. Doesn't count. Sorry. I'm going to have to say, call it on that one. And if you're half white and half Native, no, I don't know. I'm sorry. We're going to need to see full-blooded Native Americans if we're really going to have the grievance industry out. But Good Morning America has got the grievance industry out in full force. I love it, too, because you'll see these people who will go out there and they will, you know, talk about how terrible Thanksgiving is. And then later they'll post pictures of them eating.
Idea that prior to this time, there was not European contact.
So-called pilgrims weren't the first.
Pause. Who is this lady? And because it looks like that typical white liberal lady, I'm going to call BS on this one here. I want to see the DNA test on this lady right here, because she looks like the typical liberal, self-hating white liberal lady.
The English had brought fishermen, and they had already been working and talking with the Wampanoag people. And in fact, some of those early diseases that were brought over by the English wiped out entire villages of Wampanoag people.
Many of these ships that came.
I would be willing to believe that this woman is indigenous just based on looks alone, but I still want to see the DNA test because it looks like there might be a little bit of a white man in there. And if so, she, you know, people who are half indigenous and half white, the white half needs to apologize.
Their captains and crews didn't have the best of intentions. They were people that were kidnapped.
And certainly the indigenous people didn't do any kidnapping or commit any acts of violence. They were all these peaceful people who lived in total harmony. It was like the Garden of Eden.
Taken and sold into slavery in Europe. There were people who were kidnapped and taken to be displayed as curiosities in England.
They hold a national day of mourning on the U.S. holiday. Get over it. Minder the genocide of the theft of native lands and the erasure of native cultures.
This is a moment for indigenous peoples from across the Americas to converge on Plymouth and go throughout the town in a ceremonial way.
There was only one Indian tribe that was not conquered, and they were the Seminole of Florida. Anyways, enough of the lectures. We've got to go to our commercial break because my next guest is joining us. Looking forward to. Finesse Moreno Rivera. We'll talk about why Biden's marijuana reform didn't do what everybody thought it would do. Talk about that, white people. White people. When we get back on the Wake Up America Show. On the WakeUpAmericaShow.com, baby. Yes, thank you. Thank you. Good morning, it's 8:33. You're watching and listening to the Wake Up America Show with Austin Peterson at WakeUpAmericaShow.com. All right, my next guest, making her debut appearance on the show, writes over at CounterPunch.com that Biden's marijuana reforms really aren't that impressive. Joining me now is Finesse Moreno Rivera. She is an accomplished criminologist, a research analyst, a policy advisor, and a criminal justice data expert, and she's joining us now. Good morning, Finesse. Thank you for joining us on the program.
Good morning. Thank you for having me, Austin.
Yeah, thanks for coming on. So people who watch my show, The Wake Up America Show, know that I'm a full-blown, hardcore libertarian, and I believe in ending the war on drugs. So when I heard that Biden was going to have some marijuana reforms, I thought, great, maybe we're going to see some actual real movement when it comes to, you know, pardoning perhaps nonviolent offenders in the federal prison lockup. But as the details started to come out, we started to realize that this is not the reforms you're looking for. Do you want to share with us a little bit about your premise here, why Biden's reforms really aren't that impressive?
Sure. So as we all know, presidential clemency can date all the way back to Theodore Roosevelt himself. And there are a lot of reasons why that presidents do offer pardons. And a lot of these reasons could also include voter support. But really what Biden has done for these marijuana pardons for over 7,000 inmates is really nothing. As of right now, there is not one individual who is a federal inmate who is serving time solely on possession, simple possession of marijuana. So what we're seeing is that the pardons are really speaking to Biden's interest in no longer jailing individuals based off of simple possession of marijuana. But then it also really truly gleams light to the fact that he still is against full legalization of marijuana, despite 80% of the Democratic Party backing for the actual legalization.
So, you know, it's not just a Democrat thing, too. Republicans definitely standing in the way of marijuana reform, even though states, you know, many states, my state included, Missouri, voted to legalize recreational cannabis in the state of Missouri. Other states will follow suit. But the problem is that we have, you know, sentencing disparities that still exist, especially at the federal level, and a lot of other blockages to us getting the kind of reform that I think, you know, the people who watch this show and the listeners to the Wake Up America show would like to see. So, you know, but Joe Biden has a long history of being tough on crime. He's never really been in favor of marijuana reform. I mean, would you say that, I guess, you know, this is the question, that these reforms were really just political, maybe something in time for the midterms, but didn't achieve anything really substantive?
Absolutely. I think that, you know, with midterms right around the corner, I think that Biden was really going for that low hanging fruit, so to speak, when it came to looking at these marijuana pardons, because, again, this truly doesn't really impact, have a real impact upon inmates who are serving federal time as of now.
Talk to us a little bit about sentencing disparities, because I know that that's still an issue that we have at the federal level. If someone, you know, uses powdered cocaine, they get, you know, less time than someone who uses rock cocaine, but they're really just the same substance and they're both just as addictive, right?
Absolutely. So the sentencing disparity is also linked to Biden. He has come out multiple times apologizing. I don't know if that's something that really gives any weight to affecting so many people's lives for being the one who proposed the sentencing disparity in the first place back in the 90s. As we know, there has been a serious push since the beginning of this year, dating back to 2021, for there to be an equal sentencing for powder cocaine and crack cocaine. And this actually passed through the House earlier this year. However, we do have Senator Chuck Grassley in Iowa to thank for this really being kept on hold. And this is because he's completely against there for it to be equal, seen as equal. Rather, he's looking more for an 18-to-1 ratio. So again, what we're seeing is this this difference in sentencing, but it still really does hang on to this idea that crack cocaine is worse than powder cocaine.
If you're just tuning in to the Wake Up America show, I'm speaking to Finesse Moreno-Rivera. She's an expert in criminal justice reform and research analysis. She's worked with federal and state institutions like the D.C. Metropolitan Police Department and the Federal Bureau of Instigation. Yeah, we'll call them the Federal Bureau of Instigation is what they're called today. Finesse, we're glad to have you on the program today. So in the end, what does Biden's marijuana reform actually accomplish?
Not really much of anything. One can say that those inmates who have been released or, you know, certainly serving time, it would be great just to have one less charge on their record. It could also help them, you know, find housing, gain employment. But overall, it really doesn't say much. And like you said, Biden does have a stint of being tough on crime. And this really was just a way to, I think, pull more voter support, especially for the younger individuals within the U.S. So, again, I'm really disappointed to see that there really wasn't much more of an impact. If anything, what he could have done was done a rescheduling of marijuana itself. As we all know, marijuana is still a Schedule I narcotic. So if he really wanted to make a change, he could have really bumps down the scheduling for marijuana itself.
Now, Finesse, in regards to like the approach, the criminal justice approach to the war on drugs, right? You know, most people who are like myself, consider themselves philosophical libertarians, think that, you know, adults should be able to do as they please, provide they harm no one else. But my beef with the criminal justice approach to the war on drugs has been the actual lack of science-based evidence that goes into determining the standards for which drugs are listed in, I can't remember what it's called, but essentially, you know, the listing of certain drugs where you have marijuana up against like the most dangerous drugs like heroin and, you know, opium and things like that. You know, how science-based, as somebody, you know, who's worked with the FBI and the DC Metro Police, how science-based would you say is our approach to the war on drugs in terms of like ranking the actual threats of these drugs to the public?
That's a good question, Austin. And I actually did a great piece with Blavity that's called The War on Drugs and looking at the impact for African-American communities. But what we're seeing is truly a lack of scientific evidence-based practices when it comes to scheduling of our drugs. And what's harmful is that once a drug is scheduled as like a Schedule One, then that means that the government has already looked at this product as not being, having no medicinal value, number one, and number two, highly addictive. But because it's Scheduled One, that means that we're not allowing our scientists to go in and really dig in deep and actually provide scientific evidence that the given product or drug is actually not harmful and has more medicinal use and is more advantageous to have that to be rescheduled than not. So unfortunately, I think that what we're seeing is our government just kind of saying, you know what, this has gotten out of control and now we want to have a better grip on a certain drug and then just throw it in a schedule that they think is fit for the given product.
Finesse, are there any bright spots currently with the war on drugs? I mean, I know that the states are stepping up, but on the federal level, do we have any expectation that there might be some positive movements or, you know, any kind of like bipartisan push or compromises in order to have more what I would call limited government approaches to these chemical dependency problems? Do you see anything that shows like that might give you our listeners a glimmer of hope for actual reforms?
Mm-hmm. I am seeing it, especially when it comes to drug reform policies. Fortunately, what we're starting to see within the field is a lot of more medicinal help for individuals. Rather than punishing them, it's more about treatment. And that is a glimmer of hope that I'm starting to see. Also, what we're starting to see are states making their own moves as well. I do know that Oregon had already started to allow for small amounts of different types of drugs, such as psychedelics, heroin, just to kind of pilot that to see how that's going to work out for them. So, and also I believe British Columbia as well. So what we're starting to see is states once again taking the reins and making a difference to see if making some of these drugs legal can definitely make a change and be life-saving. So hopefully other states will follow in the stead of Oregon as well. And what we've seen already is states, as you've already said, Austin, who have legalized marijuana, because if the federal government isn't going to do it, then we need to take the matters into our own hands.
Finesse, there's also, and you mentioned this earlier in terms of like the sentencing disparity, there is kind of a racial element to the war on drugs, isn't there?
Absolutely. And this dates all the way back to Nixon, whenever he had said, okay, we have a war on drugs. But then also there was a racial undertone to that. And everyone knows that, that there was that racial undertone with that, given the state of the cultural at that time when it came to the Black Panther movement, Martin Luther King Jr. So this was also definitely putting more boots on the ground when it came to law enforcement within communities of color. So that was definitely was a negative impact for us because we were definitely under the microscope. And so we are overrepresented within the criminal justice system.
I'd love to hear that. Finesse, is there anything else that you think that our listeners should know before I let you go?
Absolutely. So I am continuing to be published through Young Voices. I can also be found on LinkedIn at Finesse Marino Rivera, and then also on Twitter at Finesse Marino Rivera, where I will be continuing to post my content.
Finesse, that was a great interview, and we certainly are grateful for your time today. Thank you for joining us on the show, and thanks for fighting for drug reform. We appreciate your efforts.
Thanks, Austin.